Podtacular episode 377, Gaming Regressed, for June 19th, 2013. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Dust Storm.
And I'm your other host, Brent Gamer.
And we are going to be talking about some not specifically Halo news, although we do have a matchmaking update, which we kind of glanced over last week because there was no bulletin. But there's some bigger Xbox-related news that came out today. Microsoft released a press statement basically stating that they're reverting all of their decisions on their DRM, their media sharing, or their game sharing, game libraries, and the 24-hour check-ins, all that stuff. They've basically kind of pulled back on that, going back to how their system is right now with 360, but we'll get into that here in a little bit. Do want to introduce a couple other people that we have on the stream tonight, on the podcast tonight. First off is Drax from Ready Up Live. Welcome back.
What's up, guys?
Not much. You seem to be being a regular now for these big, important podcasts.
Because I'm a big, important person. That's why.
How about that? And we also have Halo Fan for Life.
Hello, I'll be playing the part of the devil's advocate tonight, and I'm a big person. I'm not necessarily important. I'm just big.
I think we can all agree on that.
Hey!
All right. So, undoubtedly, everyone has probably heard now of the Xbox DRM post that's gone on. It's been covered by several different media outlets. A lot of Halo communities have also posted about it, so we're going to dive into that here in a little bit. But first, let's talk about some matchmaking updates that actually has gone on. So, there was a mod a little while ago that came out that actually allowed you to play as tiny, tiny Spartans. So 343 has actually come out and released that as an official game type. Now, there are some quirks with it. There are some bugs that are kind of inherent in the mod because it is a mod. It's making the game behave in a way that it wasn't initially intended to, but it's still kind of fun to play. Right now, how it's done in matchmaking is it's played on one map and one of three playlists. It's either Team Throwdown, SWAT, or Action Sack.
It's in and SWAT?
Yeah.
I've never seen it in SWAT yet.
I believe, according to what they had on the little matchmaking update, whenever you log into Halo 4, it said SWAT, Team Throwdown, and Action Sack.
Wow. Okay. I thought it was only Action Sack. Well, that's cool. Nope. I'm going to have to check that out.
Nope. It's in all three of those playlists, I believe. If not, I could be just pulling that out of my rear. maybe it is just Action Sack, and they just updated the other playlists. I like it personally.
I think they need to do a couple little tweaks to it. I think they need to increase the gravity to about 150, so you're not jumping as high. And if they reduce your movement speed to 75%, then you're not running as fast, and that puts your Spartan at the mini size at its movement and jump height at what it should be for that size. Then I've play tested this. So, you know, I know that seems to feel, better, you know, as opposed to like, if you keep the gravity the same, then when you're that little mini Spartan, you're jumping what feels like so high in the air.
Yeah. So just want to clarify that it is only in Team Action Sec. A couple people in the stream did say that. So my bad, guys. But there are updates to SWAT and Team Throwdown, so I must have misread it when I read it the first time, so sorry about that. But as I was saying, there are some things that could be changed in the game type to make it flow a little bit better. I think, for one, the gravity and the player speed are definitely two of the biggest things that need to be kind of addressed. The map that's currently in there, I forget what it's called, but it's one map that... Rail. Okay. And that's the only map right now that they have in there. But the maps that Sal has, we played through some of them on Monday Night Matchmaking, and they're pretty good. There's a little few quirks with them as well, but that's... Sure.
But they're certainly made more for Mini Slayer than Rail. Rail's a regular 2v2 map, and that's not a Mini Slayer map.
Right. I think if you do go through and kind of change up those game type settings, though, especially the speed and the player height, mm-hmm. that will actually make it to where it's a little bit better balanced.
Yeah.
Because you can almost, if you were able to do that, you can almost turn it into almost making it feel like it's actual Slayer. Now, the only downside to that is those red reticle ranges and the magnetism for that would be essentially feeling very, very extended. So, you're kind of getting an extra advantage there.
Yeah.
But it'd still be pretty cool.
I think we talked about this, too, the other day when we were playing. The radar needs to change as well, then. Since you're small, they need to just bring it in closer. What is it? You can have it down to 10 meters, I think?
Yeah, I believe the ranges are 75, 25, and 10.
Yeah, so yeah, whatever the lowest setting is, then.
There's a third one. It's either 75 or 50. It's one of the two. So, yeah, and bump that down as well. And then you'd almost be playing normal. Yep. Except it would look like the weapons are still big.
Right.
So, that's the one kind of new game type that was thrown into the team action sack. So, that's pretty cool. A couple updates to the SWAT playlist. There's two new game types in there as well. The first one is Forerunner SWAT. Your starting weapon is the light rifle, and your secondary is the bolt shot. Pulse grenade. Infinite ammo, no weapons on map, no armor abilities, and regular map rotation. So basically SWAT, except with Forerunner weapons instead.
Question on that. Question. Is the mm-hmm. bolt shot a one-shot kill without being overcharged?
If you get a headshot.
Yeah, in the head, yeah.
That's confirmed?
That's always how it's been.
Yeah, if a player doesn't have shields and you shoot him in the head with a bolt shot round... Just a regular bolt shot round in regular matchmaking, then yeah.
I'm talking in the SWAT playlist, though. The reason why I ask is when we get to the Covenant portion, plasma pistol is not a one-shot headshot kill.
But see, they could probably tweak it so the plasma pistol with their tuning in that playlist does more damage.
Yeah, but they didn't. Go ahead. Sorry about that, Dust.
No, that's all right. The Covenant SWAT is basically the same thing. Except there are no plasma grenades, so... Yeah.
That's good.
Does regular SWAT have grenades in it? I don't think it does.
No.
So, Forerunner SWAT's the only one that has grenades in the loadout.
I don't really think it helps all that much anyways, so I don't think it's that much of a difference.
Yeah.
And for those that need carbine kills and light rifle kills, this is certainly good news for them. I think I need less than 200... light rifle, but it's made me play SWAT again, at least. I just wish that the plasma pistol and the bolt shot were both one-shot kills from distance, because, man, then I'd be playing SWAT like crazy to work on those commendations.
Yeah.
The only problem I have with the pulse grenade is you can usually, if you don't have any shields, you throw it down right by somebody, and that initial burst instantly kills people.
Yeah.
So it's basically like having a frag if you're able to hit it right by somebody.
You only get one, though, don't you? You don't get two, do you?
It says pulse grenades.
Oh. See, if I saw Forerunner Slayer come up, I'd pick it. I've only been able to play Covenant. I've never seen that come up yet.
I feel like the pulse grenades take more skill to use, though.
Like, they do.
Like, you know what I mean? Like with a frag, it's kind of a general, you chuck it in the enemy's direction because its radius is larger.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Whereas the plasma and pulse grenades have the same radius, but there's a smaller radius than the frag.
Plus, you can also bounce frag grenades off of places. So if you need to, you know, get somebody around a corner, you can bounce it off a wall. Mm-hmm. You know, stickies won't do that, and certainly pulse grenades don't do that either.
Yeah, like with the pulse grenades in SWAT, you're going to need to basically hit somebody with a pulse grenade in order to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right. Let's see, there's a couple other updates that we have for Team Throwdown. So, of course, the Team Throwdown has been updated with the V4 settings. Those have been there for, what, about a month?
I believe so.
So, yeah. There's a few more different game types in here, or game type map combinations. So, the voting slots that you're going to see now are Abandoned Team Slayer, Adrift CTF, Dispatch CTF, Haven Team Slayer, Haven Extraction, Onyx Team Slayer, Simplex Team Slayer, Simplex CTF, Skyline Team Slayer, Skyline CTF, and Station 9 Extraction. So those are the new combination of maps and game types that you will see in the Team Throwdown playlist.
Nice.
Big Team Slayer Pro, there is going to be no more kill cam, and the motion trackers are being enabled. They weren't enabled. Oh, yeah, it's Pro, so they wouldn't have been enabled before. So those are two changes coming to the Big Team Slayer Pro. And for the Encore presentation of Spartan Ops this week, we have Episode 7, Chapter 2, Homefield; Episode 8, Chapter 3, Lancer; Episode 2, Chapter 3, Hacksaw; Episode 9, Chapter 1, The Search for Halsey; and Episode 9, Chapter 5, The Hammer.
I played the Chapter 7 one, and I quite enjoyed it. I, of course, that's my favorite of all the episodes, but not the favorite mission, but certainly of the episodes.
Well, it's the one where you're back on Infinity, so it's...
Yeah, that's why I like it, because you're on the Infinity.
Yeah. It's... I know a lot of people were kind of griping about having to play on the Infinity four times in a certain episode, but in terms of how it just fit with the storyline, and
it was
fun to actually walk around Infinity for a change.
Yeah, and besides, each episode, well, with the exception of the first one, because, you know, it's the first one, each subsequent one opened up a new play space. It's play space that you didn't have before. So, you know, part of it was the same, but some of it was new.
You know, yeah, what they could do with a Kinect experience for Halo 5? Have an interactive mode to actually walk through the entirety of Infinity.
Oh, hells yeah. I had suggested that as well. What I'd actually like to see, if I can interrupt, I know I do that a lot, I'm sorry.
Go for it.
Whenever you go to change your armor, instead of it just being, you know, like you could choose to do it quickly, but how about you actually go into one of those armor gyroscopic thingies that they had, and it comes up and it, you know, it pulls up the armor, and, you know, I mean, obviously if you're going into matchmaking, you can do it quickly, but if you want to do the interactive thing, you have an option that you could go do the interactive part of it. So then you could go and, you know, look at what the armor looks like, not on your body. Like you could see your Spartan, in just that bodysuit without the armor. And then look at the armor that you have to choose from, and then you can pick it, and then your Spartan gets in the gyroscopic harness, and then they put it on you, and it would just, that interaction,
I think, would be great. So you're saying kind of like the armor selection thing from Dead Space, how they like step, that you can like pick which one you want, and then he steps in, and it shows your player getting the armor put on, or whatever. It doesn't really show it, because he gets sealed inside the case, but...
Sure, but
you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Yeah. I think that'd be fun myself.
Yeah, it'd be really cool. And even with the Kinect, if they could like show your face like before you get the helmet put on.
Yeah.
Like how crazy would that be?
Well, that's another thing I was going to say too, as far as interactivity, you know, even though we probably wouldn't see it necessarily in game, how about we get something like Mass Effect where we can choose what our faces look like? Oh my God, that would just be so much better. Again, you know, like maybe if they had Spartan Ops or something else, some other kind of game mode where you didn't have to have your helmet on. Well, that would be fantastic. Then you could have your, you know, well, a face anyways in the game. But as far as what Dustin was saying, sorry, what POD Duststorm was saying, because I know we have a couple Dustins in here. being able to
just
walk.
Just Duststorm. It's not POD Duststorm. It's just Duststorm.
Duststorm, sorry. Not Pod Dust, I'm sorry. as far as being able to walk the Infinity, that would be fantastic. I'd love to be able to go up on the bridge. That's something that I was hoping for with Spartan Ops, and we didn't get that chance. You know, going to see the engine room, you know, we did part of that. But even simple things like, you know, the mess hall, the Spartan level, you know, where they get, where you go into the harnesses, and just all of that would be fantastic to see. You should be able to go into the hangars and actually maybe get into a Pelican, or just, there's so much potential for that.
So that pretty much wraps it up for the bulletin for this, or not the bulletin, the matchmaking update for this week. Refreshing the waypoint site, I still don't see a bulletin so far, so we're just going to go ahead and jump right into the Microsoft press release that came out today, and this is regarding the Xbox One, of course. When there was the Xbox reveal event about a month ago, Microsoft revealed some things that a lot of people weren't exactly happy about. Among these things were a 24-hour check-in that you had to do, something another thing where the DMR policy, specifically talking about DRM, sorry.
Did I say
DMR, really?
Yeah, Xbox One comes with the DMR? Yes, please.
Molten Slow actually posted something on his Twitter feed about that. He'll post in the Twitch chat, I'm sure. As far as the DMR going from what you can do with used games, with giving it to other people, and there's a few other things that went along with their announcement that the community as a whole were kind of not very happy with. And then the presentation at E3 that Sony had, basically usurping what Microsoft said and going with their all free model, pretty much saying that you don't have to pay any fees for used games, that you could hand it over to your friends without any extra charge and all that stuff, basically boost Sony up into the top tier for being the console that most people are going to pick coming this holiday season. Unfortunately, that was kind of led on by the fact that Microsoft did a horrible PR job for what they announced at their Xbox reveal. They sort of realized that a little bit too late. They started releasing more information about their whole DRM system and what other features you actually were able to get out of it. So boiling down some of the cool features that I think were included in, you guys can jump in if you think of anything that I don't think of. The big one for me was the fact that you could actually buy one copy of the game and share it with up to 10 of your friends. That's right, 10 different people could play your game. Now, this doesn't mean that 10 people could play it simultaneously. The max on that would have been the owner of the copy could play it, and then one other person could play it. But the fact that 10 people could play one game would actually be something that's quite significant.
But they couldn't play it simultaneously?
The owner and one other person could at the same time, yes.
Okay.
But not all 10.
Sorry.
So essentially, you would basically be buying two copies straight up for the price of one. So think about paying only $30 for a game at launch. And then the potential of, depending on what kind of a game it is, like if it's a first person, or if it's a story only mode game, like maybe Assassin's Creed or something, then think of having that for 10 different people that can play it at different times. And you're basically boiling that down to $6 a game. So that was one thing that was a big piece of the DRM stuff that we had that has been taken away. The game library, where you could basically install a game on any console, and then you could go to any other console in the world, and as long as you had your gamer tag, you could play any of the games registered in your game library.
Isn't that how cloud works now, though?
Not for Xbox.
How does cloud work now?
Cloud is just your game saves.
Huh?
Cloud is just your game saves.
Okay.
Yeah, so with progress.
With the game library, you don't have to take any disc with you. You go to any Xbox and you can download and stream any game while it's downloading in the background and play wherever, whenever. As long as you have your gamertag, your saves go with you, your games go with you. Everything goes with you.
So let me ask you this then. Why did that have to go away because of these reversals? To me, that feels like a punishment.
That was tied with the DRM.
How so? This is where I need to have some education. How so?
Because that DRM system is what ties in for you to actually be able to use the games, for you to register that game as your own, and being able to basically sublease that DRM right to 10 other people. With that DRM system gone, we lose all those capabilities.
See, I still think that technology is there for them to say, okay, if you log in on somebody else's Xbox, you can it'll be able to recognize that that's you, as long as there's an internet connection, and that you can play your games from anywhere.
So I download a game, then I go offline, then anyone on there can play it without any DRM.
You'd have to be logged onto somebody else's, you know, box.
But you can't do that way with having all your games online anymore. I mean, sure, I guess you could do it for...
like games that you would download to your Xbox, not ones with physical discs, but games that you download. I don't understand is why cloud wouldn't be able to allow you to say, okay, I'm going to go over to my friend Dustin's house and I want to play Halo 5 now. I've downloaded it to it because I bought it first day as a download, a digital download, which they can do. You can do that. And I'm going over to my friend Dustin's house and I want to play this.
So the thing is, you go over to someone's house, you load your profile on that Xbox. Mm-hmm. You do it however many times. They go offline, and the Soteros actually posted in there. They go offline. If you download that game to 100 different Xboxes, they go offline. That's now 100 copies of games that other people can play with playing your profile offline.
No, but what I'm saying is you they don't download the game. If you're using cloud, basically cloud says, okay, this user has the game. See, this is where I think they could do streaming games then and allow us to play.
That's exactly what they were talking about, was streaming games down from the cloud as you log into your service using the DRM stuff.
And they took that away because they had to take away the DRM.
Because without the DRM, you can't ensure that when you go download it to another person and taking away the always online feature, that you're going to be able to distribute as many copies as it to you want, essentially, to any Xbox. Now, granted, people might not be able to play on their own gamertag, but that's still 100 different copies or however many you decide to install it on of people having the game and being able to play the game without paying a dime.
Hmm.
So you're going from a game that's $60 per person down to mere cents.
Okay.
True. Yeah.
That's good. That's good. This is what I said. I needed an education on this to understand it. Okay, I get you.
So essentially, if you boil it down to the bare minimum for first-person shooter games, most of the time you're on there. So you buy a copy, you share it with any of your friends. Of course, not everyone's going to be able to play it at the same time, but you're guaranteed two people right off the bat. So the owner and one other person. So that's basically $30 for one game. That's half the price of what we pay for now, which is a freaking good deal. I mean, most of the games don't even go down past below 30 if they're AAA titles.
Yeah, exactly.
And for like at least 6 months, and you get that basically day one.
Yeah,
we lost that.
It would have been crazy awesome to be like, okay, well, me and my friend can't afford to buy this brand new game that's $60 that's coming out, but we can't afford to spend $30 a piece. So my friend will give me $30 and I'll go buy the game for $60 and we both get to play it. Because, you know what I'm saying? Like we basically buy the game together. But it's technically mine, but he gets to play it because I allow him access to do so.
And you can do that with up to 10 people.
Yeah. So, I mean, that would have just been awesome. And like I mentioned on Twitter earlier, because we were talking actually about it on Skype earlier, the RUL staff was talking about when we do our community nights, it would have been great to say Battlefield 4 comes out, right? And only half the staff, or say two or three of us, buy it right away. Well, we can allow three other people or whatever on the staff, one other person apiece, to have access to that game. So now there's six of us that can host an RUL night together, and only three of us had to pay for the game.
Okay, but now, see, there, that's what I don't understand then. See, the people, you know, that are saying, well, then the developers aren't getting money by, you know, allowing used games and all that. Well, they're also not getting money because people are being able to essentially only pay half from the very beginning of when the game's launched, as opposed to waiting several months down the line when the game is cheaper.
But you're having more full purchased games being bought than used games.
But you're not really. You got six people, three of them buy it full price, but six people are playing on it. Instead, if they do it the way they're doing it now, you get three people that buy it. They pay full price. Those other three people, they don't get to play it until they buy it.
Yeah.
And so they have to buy it, and whether they buy it used or buy it new down the line, that's still more money being made. Now, if they buy it used, then obviously, you know, places like GameStop are the ones that are making the money. However, when you tie in the DLC and other stuff like that that's downloaded, then that developer gets the money from the download. So the developer is still getting some kind of money.
That's true. I mean, I can see what you mean. Like the whole sharing thing is kind of screwing over the developer. I mean, that's plain and simple. I mean, the reason why Microsoft did it, I think, was mainly to promote their console, because it's a selling point for the console. Be like, oh, well, if I get an Xbox One, I only have to pay half price for my games because my buddy will let me play them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's an incentive for people to buy the console. So it was kind of like a, you know, slap in the back of the head to the developers, and Microsoft said that they were going to do that. But at the same time, the developers are so excited about what the Xbox One can do and what they can do with their games that I think that they were just kind of like, eh, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, they just kind of took it.
Well, I don't think it's completely screwing them over as we anticipated to them. There's probably some research out there, but behind how many used games are actually shared among people. And it's probably not among the rates of five times shared, yeah. But it's still quite significant.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I even now with physical copies, I rarely, like right now I have Resident Evil 6 that I borrowed from my cousin that I've played and beaten it or whatever, and that's the only game I've borrowed from a friend probably in like the past year and a half. Like, I don't really ever lend games or borrow games from friends or whatever. It's a rare occurrence. So
I mean, people are still going to go out there and buy the games. I don't think everyone's going to be sharing to 10 different people.
Yeah.
Not everyone's going to be doing that. It's going to be a rare occasion, to be honest.
Even if they limited, like, if you're borrowing a game from a friend, like online, like through the sharing system, if the developers put some kind of limitation on it, so you can only access certain parts of the game or something, just to make the person that's borrowing the game want to actually go out and buy the full version and like have it for themselves. You know what I mean?
Right.
So,
and with full versions of games, there may be like extra stuff that you get with when you buy it on your own.
Yeah, like say Battlefield 4, I buy the premium edition, and it comes with like this awesome DLC with like these extra weapons or skins or whatever. But then I let my friend borrow it, and he doesn't get any of that. He only gets the bare bones stuff. Well, he's gonna want the stuff that I've got, but he can still play it with the bare bones stuff. But he's gonna see me using it and being like, oh well, this game is a lot of fun. It's probably worth it. I should probably go get that extra stuff and pay full price. That should be something that they could do.
There's actually from talking with a couple of people, there's a big commission that GameStop and these other gaming resellers actually take off of brand new games. Like, that full $60 doesn't go back to the developer.
Oh, well, no, yeah, there's always markup.
I can understand that. I mean, it's called markup.
Yeah.
But I hear it's pretty significant.
Well, yeah, because there's the cost of making the physical disc and the cases and all that kind of stuff too. So it's, I mean, you're selling software, but you're also selling something physical as well.
And you have to think there's also distribution that, you know, the game sellers like GameStop and so on, they're the ones that are actually doing the physical distribution of the physical discs. So they got to pay for that too.
Mm-hmm.
But imagine so that if you don't have any of that and you're buying the games digitally, which a lot of people are going to move to because everyone has this. There's a lot of people out there that now have the bandwidth to support it. Like, I would honestly, if there wasn't any special limited edition version of the game to buy, I would buy all my stuff digitally. And that's $60. That's $50-$60 unfettered with maybe a small Microsoft hosting fee that goes straight to the developer, which is significantly more than what they're going to get from a reseller like Walmart or GameStop or Target. So they're actually getting more money with their digital distribution system where they're having the games done day one.
Mm. Hey, what about the argument that if games were done digital distribution, that they would have been sold for cheaper? See, I don't agree with that. I think the market's already used to games being $60, that even if you take away the cost of, you know, printing for, you know, for the covers, for the cases and any, you know, directions within, as well as the, you know, manufacturing of the discs and the cases, I don't think that would have reduced the cost of the game then. I think they would continue to sell the games for $60 and just make more profit.
I wasn't anticipating any reduction in price. I was just hoping for not much of an increase in price. Yeah,
there are some out there that believed that it would have been possible for, you know, for whether it's Microsoft or developers to give us the games cheaper then, because with digital distribution, there isn't as much production cost involved. See, that's not, I'm sorry, being in marketing myself for 15 years, that's just not going to happen, folks. Prices very rarely come down on things. When the market is saturated with a certain price and they're used to it, then the best you're going to get is that it'll stay at that price for a while.
Yeah.
Longer than it would have if, you know, versus continuing the way it is now.
See, isn't that why Steam has their sales and stuff, though, because I mean, they can afford to put on those sales because they don't do actual physical production. I'm not saying, yeah, I mean, 90% of the time they sell their games full price, but then 10% of the time they have these crazy sales where games that are like blockbuster titles are like half the price.
Let's just put it this way. I wouldn't have bought half the games I own on Steam if they weren't on sale.
Exactly.
And that is extra revenue that they got that I wouldn't have normally given because of those sales.
And they were
planned not as frequent and not as significant of sales as it is on Steam.
Yeah, but look at what they've done recently and what they're doing now, though. They're giving away games for free now. Fable 3.
Yeah, but like, let's be honest. That was in anticipation of what their current DRM system was going to be, or their previous DRM system now was going to be like. That the fact that they would be able to do something like that.
That's true. So you think they're going to take that away now, then?
Probably.
Likely. I mean, we were discussing this before the show, and it's likely that it's not going to go past this year.
Yeah. That's true.
Unless Microsoft gets smart and changes it back, in my opinion.
They're not going to change it back.
Probably not, but, I mean, they listened to the community once before. Doesn't mean that can't happen again. Listen to the smart side of the community. Listen to the people that are actually taking the time to listen to what you got having to say.
Yeah.
All right, going to that argument then, and take this all with a grain of salt, okay? What makes that argument smarter than the argument of having the reversal?
Because they're adopting a platform that's similar to Steam, which is highly, highly successful.
Yep.
What's the market share versus other, other like technology?
Steam dominates that market. Steam
dominates over Origin, over Uplay, over everything. Steam dominates the PC gaming market when it comes to selling games.
How many people are you talking, though? That's what I want to know.
Millions.
Okay.
Yeah. And even when Origin came out, people were extremely, extremely angry at Origin because of the way they were doing it. So people have a bad taste in their mouth about Origin to begin with, and I hardly know anyone that actually even really uses Uplay. So nothing against Ubisoft. I just don't think that it's going to ever be up to par with even Origin. So that just tells you how much Steam is just... Because Steam's been around for a while, too.
Steam is essentially the Xbox Live of PC gaming, and Steam even reached out to Microsoft back when they were developing... games for Windows and like, let us help you with this, and Microsoft turned them down. And now look at, they're a very, very successful distribution platform for the PC. Just got a chat message in there from Molten Sola. Over 3 million people signed into Steam over the last 48 hours.
Yep.
Okay.
So that just shows you that if you do it right and you do it like Steam, then Microsoft had the ability to dominate the digital download market for consoles.
And now they're backpedaling.
Yeah.
You know, I think what I'm getting from this then is the digital download aspect of it, that sounds fine. I think what some of the key issues are, and this is certainly what I had, is why did we have to check in every 24 hours? What if, you know, the arguments are, you know, what if your internet goes down, you lose power, you go on vacation, you come back, how long is it going to be before your Xbox One enables you to play games again?
So let me
weren't directly answered.
Okay.
That really irked people. And then the idea of the Kinect as well, which we haven't really gotten to, but just briefly on that, I think a lot of people were spooked by the idea of having this potential device
yes,
be able to look there, at you with all of its technology.
There is, yes. But let me address your point about the 24-hour check-in. That was for me the only issue I had with it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are even people starting to come out and say, for people that were deployed in military and for people that were not in internet serviceable areas, they were actually starting to come out and develop a way that would not be an issue, but they hadn't gotten to that yet. That information hadn't come out yet, and people are still clamoring over it. If people would have just taken the time to actually hear Microsoft out. Now, granted, their PR pitch at Xbox reveal was horrible. That was the one big downside, that Microsoft is failing right now in this console war. And now they've succumbed to pressure. They've succumbed to the feedback that the community at large has given them, even though from a lot of I consider quite a few people that are on my Twitter feed that I subscribe to very knowledgeable in the gaming industry. Microsoft succumbed to the pressure, and what they had a good system that it wasn't fully explained yet, but now they're going back to how Xbox is now, and frankly, it's a step in the wrong direction. It's a regression. They were being innovative in their current system, and they regressed. And the only thing I had a problem with was the 24-hour check-in.
Yeah.
And that's something that could have gone away.
You know, and I think, you know, you were saying that there was technology being developed for that. See, this is where I keep saying Microsoft needs to be upfront and a bit more transparent with this. If they would have said that along with everything else that they had talked about, I think it would have been, you know, much more a much more easier pill to swallow to say, you know, oh, hey, you know, you're not going to have to worry about this. You know, we're going to have a back end fix for this. We're still working on it, but it'll be there before launch. But because they don't and they want to remain secretive with a lot of this stuff, that gets people, you know, edgy and kind of up in arms. And, you know, I mean, I'm glad to know that that was possible. And if I'd have known that beforehand, I probably wouldn't have, posted my posts on my blog. It would have been, you know, like Penn Taylor just said in the stream, it was good, but it was a little too late, you know? And that's the problem.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what you're saying. Their PR and the whole announcement, it was just a flop. Like, they could have done so much better with it. I feel like Microsoft didn't really prepare a whole lot for their reveal. I really feel like they kind of rushed it like last minute. Like within the last month.
They wanted to be out Sony with their console reveal. Yeah. They wanted to get that edge. And unfortunately, that edge that they wanted to gain revealed too much in terms of some of the stuff that they were doing with the DMR and the licensing. And people just got upset too quickly. And I mean, I was one of those people that were very, very edgy and hesitant on that. But very soon after that, like 3 days ago, I'm like, okay, I know some of the stuff sounds bad, but I'm going to wait to hear it out.
Exactly. And that's what I told my friends.
And we started to hear things. We started to see that, okay, it's not as bad. We started to once people, I mean, the whole being able to use it with 10 different friends was kind of a silent announcement. I didn't really see it posted very, very hugely, but it was a significant issue.
Yeah. They didn't make a big deal about it. Like I seen multiple, you know, like graphics, like images, like depicting of how it would have worked. A couple of them today. And they even said like right on the graphics, like this is like the greatest feature of the Xbox One in the new system. Why is Microsoft not screaming this to the world of how innovative and crazy awesome this is? Like they should have made a commercial. They should have made like these huge deals. Like it should have been all over the place because it really is an outstanding idea.
Which idea is this?
The being able to share it with 10 people digitally, like I would have loved, like you saw on my Twitter earlier, like I said, like, and on my Facebook, my page, I actually just posted this, like, I have real life physical friends that live close by that I would love to be able to share my games with just like I do now. Okay. But the Xbox One would have had an insane advantage over the PS4 if they could have been able to not only do physical sharing with friends that are local. But what about my friends, like my staff and my members on RUL? What if I want to share my games with them? They live halfway across the country. Like, that would have been amazing. I would have been loved to do that. But they didn't make that a big deal. They didn't announce that to the world like they should have. It was kind of like a quiet little, like Duststorm said, like they just kind of probably mentioned it in an interview or something. And it was just a little quip that, you know what I mean? They didn't make the bullet points in the reveal that they should have. They didn't focus on the big, big, awesome issues, and it was just really disappointing.
You know, I think another part of the problem, at least this is how I looked at it for their reveal, for the original one, having the executives do the reveal, I'm sorry, but that was kind of a stuffed shirt, you know, not necessarily good old boys, because there wasn't, you know, not all of them were white. I think there was one that was, what is he, Indian or something like that, but it was just that it was like a stuffed shirt presentation. And, you know, if you're going to do this new console, I would have loved to see something more dynamic, you know, hey, I'm sorry, but throw a pretty girl in there or somebody that's, you know, somebody that's, you know, more pleasing to look at that would, you know, give us a really fun presentation. For me, it just felt like a huge PowerPoint presentation by a stuffed shirt executive. And yeah. I just did not, you know, I wasn't excited about it because of that.
You know, it's funny, that whole reveal, speaking of that, you know, the whole entertainment part of the reveal, I kind of feel it's, I mean, it's pretty sad when the biggest amount of applause that you get at a reveal is when you raise a car out of the floor rather than reveal the issues about the console.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that was probably the most exciting part of the whole reveal, was the Forza thing. Like, that was it. You know, people got more excited about that car than they did the console, which is sad.
Yeah, you know what? I have to agree with you too, though. I was pretty excited looking at the car.
That thing is beautiful, absolutely beautiful. But
yeah, they really could have done a better job. I mean, even if, you know, they could have turned to some of their some of the gaming industry's spokespeople. What's that one? The one girl from, I think she was with IGN. Was her name Jessica?
Jessica Chobot?
Yeah, I mean, somebody like her. Not necessarily her, but somebody like her that people know, people like her, she's pretty enough. She could have certainly done, you know, a reveal, you know, or at least, you know, part of it, you know. And she would have been exciting to watch, you know.
Yeah, was it Ubisoft that had Aisha Tyler do their reveals and stuff?
See?
You know what I'm saying? Like, why can't they just get some celebrity gamer to do it? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
gamer.
Like, it would have been crazy.
You know,
Jen Taylor.
I just think, you know, they kind of fell flat there, and the whole presentation seemed rather flat. And what's his name? Don Matrick, the prez for Xbox.
Oh, gosh.
I'm sorry, but the guy seemed kind of smug. Whoo, I just was not happy with his presentation at all.
Yeah. Putting suits on stage for the entire thing was not the best idea.
Right.
So, I don't know.
Now, I gotta be honest. I mean, the whole premise of what Xbox was giving us, a lot of it I really did like. There was just those couple of few things that really bothered me, you know, and I already mentioned a couple of them. They just, like we've been saying, if they did a better job of presentation, made it more dynamic, more exciting, you know, for all these features, you know, when they kept talking about TV, 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 and then they kept mentioning, like they mentioned fantasy football, I'm thinking, oh my God, how many people really do fantasy football, and how many of those are going to do that through their Xbox? It just, to me, it was like, yeah, that's a throwaway feature I'm never going to use. Maybe there are people out there, but, you know, for me, I want a console that's a gaming console. All this other stuff, a lot of it, in fact, this is part of my argument. A lot of what they were trying to pitch is already in some facet within the 360. So they're just tweaking the technology somewhat. I mean, yes, there are advances to it, and with the Kinect you can do some more things, and it's a better Kinect and all that, but you know, it just seemed like they were just tweaking some of it, and it wasn't like a huge advantage. You know, maybe being able to play a game and then look up the internet or getting onto Skype, that's cool for some people, but I don't know, me, I just I can multitask, but when I'm gaming, I really just like to game, and I've got my smartphone if I need to use that, you know. I don't know. I just didn't see a huge advantage to all this other stuff. So that's why I'm kind of, you know, not to say I was on the fence about getting an Xbox One. I want to get one regardless. But seeing the price being $100 more for technology that I didn't see was a huge increase, especially being forced to have a Kinect, that in the way they describe it, you know, being always on and all that, just, it was, you know, it's creepy and just not something I as a gamer wanted. That could be the old man in me, but that's me.
So when we were actually doing our initial Xbox reveal podcast, we touched a little bit on the idea of possibly having a gaming-only Xbox One. And we kind of got into the discussion where it might not sell as well just based on the market. There's a lot more Xboxes out there being used for the entertainment side of things. And I know for us, we're mostly gamers. So, of course, we fit into a minority where we primarily use our Xboxes for gaming. But I mean, personally myself, I use Netflix quite a bit. So having those other things is nice to have, but
I
it
just
would
found out
be
about
nice to,
last
about Sorry. What having,
well, I have, you know, we have Verizon for our, our cable company. And I just found out last night that I could log into my Verizon account through my Xbox. So now I can actually watch without having my cable box. I guess, so, you know what? That's cool. I can
the only thing to that is it's a 2-minute delay.
Oh, big deal. I'm not worried about 2 minutes. If I'm watching my favorite TV show, it's not like I'm going to worry about, you know, some, it's ahead by 2 minutes.
Well, I mean, TV show is one thing, but if you're watching sports, I mean, if you see your Twitter feed blow up 2 minutes before something actually happens.
Yeah. I mean, there's good and bad with it, I guess. But, right. You know, I'm happy to find it out. But see, this is what I'm saying then. You know, they're saying, oh, well, you know, we can bring your TV to the Xbox One. Well, wait, you already do that with the 360. You know, well, we can bring you Netflix and this and that. But you already do that with the 360. So, you know, all this advancement in technology they're talking about just doesn't feel like it's that much of an advancement. You know, their user interface is better. But it just didn't feel like it was that much more, you know, especially for it to be $100 more. I know you guys you disagree with me on the reversal, but I personally think it was a good move, for certain reasons. I can see your guys' point too now, and I'm glad we're having the conversation. But they still have some ground to make up. You know, this, the $100 more, especially for having Kinect, you know, you touched on it there, Dustin, that, you know, we talked about having like an Xbox Lite. I wouldn't mind that it comes with all the features, but I don't necessarily want that Kinect. I don't necessarily want something, you know, looking at me. So if I don't have to have Kinect and have it be $100 less, I'm sold. Give it to me. I'll take all the rest of what you got there. That's fine.
Well, we were talking about the Xbox Lite being just gaming specific. So it would be just the one gaming OS without all the additional stuff. So it'd basically be a price cut for not having that extra OS on there, not having the extra memory, and probably still having the Kinect. That's what we were thinking of.
Well, the way I look at it now is the 360 has a lot of this extra stuff. So basically, whatever the 360 has, the Xbox One should have. So if you've got the connectivity for, you know, all these apps, Netflix and being able to watch your cable through Verizon or whomever else, that should be there for the Xbox One, and it shouldn't cost anything more. You know, it's for me, it really boils down to that Kinect. If you get a Kinect now for the 360, if you don't already have one, it costs what? $100, right? So that's the price difference. You know, I don't mind that
actually, it's $130, I believe.
Woo, okay, even more. But, you know, So you're integrating it into this box, but if I don't really want Kinect, you know, and if you're saying that, well, you have to have Kinect, because otherwise certain aspects of the Xbox One won't function, you know, then you're forcing that kind of technology, you know, I don't know. It's hard for me to wanna. No, it's not Southtacular Podcast. It's hard for me. Sorry, looking at the stream. It's just hard for me, I guess, to allow a company to come into my living room, basement, wherever I have my setup and, you know, potentially look at me whenever, you know, and I'm still worried and maybe it's unfounded, but I'm still worried about, you know, the potential hacking involved. You know, I don't know, you know, if it's even possible for people to be able to hack in and look at other people's, you know, look through other people's Kinect. But if that becomes the case, if it ever happens, oh my God, that's going to be a PR nightmare.
That's the thing, though. What is the requirement for the Kinect, though? Doesn't it just have to be plugged in? I mean, it doesn't need to see you, right?
So it's supposed to be just plugged in, but there's apparently other ways, like ways that they were going to be able to make it to where you decide if you want Kinect to essentially be on or not.
Yeah, it just has to be plugged in for the Xbox to work. So like even if
like there's supposed to be switches on the back where you could essentially turn off the Kinect.
Yeah. Well, that's great, but like even my hypothetical situation, okay? Even if it has to be on all the time, what's keeping you from just spinning it around and placing it against the wall or putting a game case in front of it if you don't want it to look at you?
Well, here I'll throw that out there then. For in the case of movies, this is only what I've heard. So if I'm wrong, I'm fine with that. Well, what I've heard is that the Kinect, in order for you to be able to watch movies, the Kinect has to be able to look at you and know, okay, there's only one person watching, that if a second person comes in, it's going to pause it. And either that person has to leave the room or you have to pay for a second viewer.
See, that's dumb. I don't like the way the
Kinect
works.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah. If that's true, then I don't like that. But Yeah. That's not the way the Kinect works now.
I don't think they would do something like that.
If a second person walks into the room, all they have to do is say Xbox pause. Mm. If they want it to pause. You know what I mean? Like, why would you... The Kinect doesn't need to be that automated. As long as it can hear you, and if you want to use motion control, all you got to do is move whatever's in the way of the motion sensor.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, if you want to use just voice commands, just put something in front of the motion sensor if it bothers you that much. You know what I mean? Like, right now, my Kinect is, like, it's actually, I think I hit it with something earlier. It must be yesterday. It's like, crooked right now, and I was just using voice commands earlier. Like, I don't need to do, you know, motion control. It's not even aiming at me right now. Like, so it's not...
If it doesn't need to see you, then I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
You know? I think it doesn't have to. It just has to be plugged in.
Yeah, I think the visual aspect of it is just if you want to be in the view of the camera because you're playing a motion sensing game or you're on Skype or whatever you're doing, then you just position it so you take the cover off or whatever you have on it so they can see you. And then if you don't want it to see you anymore after you're done, you just cover it back up or whatever.
Speaking about the Skype thing, I really see that being taken advantage of in some not so good ways.
Yeah, well, that's people's personal preference.
So, I think you guys know what I mean. I don't need to go into detail, but yeah.
I'm sure people do that anyway with their PCs. So, like,
yeah, well, that's what I mean. And Xbox is just, boy, I almost said something else. Xbox is just enabling that kind of behavior with integrating the Kinect in there.
You can still do it now, though. You can still do Kinect video chat. It's just going to be on Skype now.
Sure, but you know, but you have to pay extra for the Kinect, and that's keeping some people back. Anyways, we can get away from that part of the conversation. I'm just saying.
Well, I actually just posted something that's still kind of within that. There's an article posted on Polygon.com, and the title of it is "Xbox One Kinect May Violate Proposed Government Privacy Bill."
Yeah.
So, really? Yeah. So even with the whole Kinect having to be connected thing, there may be something that Microsoft has to change about that as well.
Well, I know Germany has something against them, and they said that, you know, if that's something that's required, that they're going to file suit against them. Because
yeah, I heard
Germany's,
something like that too.
Yeah, Germany has a really stern view on privacy issues. And then there's some other issues with the Xbox One itself not even being available in certain countries in Europe upon launch. And that's something that the EU, the European Union, has laws against as well, that you can't, that you have to be able to allow technology, you know, or whatever your goods or services are. If you're going to allow it to be in one country of the EU, it has to be available for all the countries in the EU. The example that that was given was the developers for Witcher, the new one that was just shown at E3, are out of Poland, but Poland is one of those countries supposedly that's not going to have the Xbox One on launch date. So that's something that would be against EU law. So, you know, Microsoft is kind of, you know, they got to watch what they're doing when it comes to that kind of stuff. They got to make their stuff available, but they also have to watch their privacy issues because Germany is ready to nail them with a fine. Now, from what I understand, the fine is rather paltry, but it sets precedents that other places could jump on the board with.
Exactly. Like I said, I feel like Microsoft jumped the gun on a lot of stuff. I feel like they were rushed and they kind of just got this stuff out there as quick as they could because they wanted to beat Sony to the punch and they didn't really think it through.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I don't know. Don't get me wrong. I love Microsoft. I mean, I used to be the whole, you know, big money hater back when I was in like high school too. Oh, screw Microsoft. I'm going with Apple products. Microsoft's a big money monger, blah, blah, blah. But like, I don't know. I'm a Microsoft guy now. Like I've told my friends all the time, like nothing against it. I highly doubt there's any like hardcore PlayStation fans listening right now. But if you are, I apologize. But like, I personally can't stand Sony as a company. I really hate them. I'm not saying the PS4 is bad. The PS4 is a great console. The PlayStation, I've never really had an issue with. I just don't like Sony themselves. Because they're a company that's been proven to do, there's a term for it, but they intentionally design their products to fail just after warranty. So you have to buy another product or buy replacement parts from them. companies that do that, in my opinion, are really crappy.
There's a lot of companies that do that, my man.
I know, but personally, it's affected me a lot because back when I was, you know, I was a kid and stuff, like, I didn't have a whole lot of money. And when I did buy something, like, I'll just use my original Walkman as an example. Back when I was, like, a freshman in high school, like, I bought, like, probably four my freshman year because they would literally break, like, every couple of months. And that's just – Sony has just put a bad taste in my – that's going to sound really bad, but whatever. Sony has put a bad impression on me, and I really don't like them. They've – you know, I'm just turned off by Sony. Like, I don't know. Their products, other than their TVs and their gaming consoles, the rest of their products aren't really the best quality, in my opinion. I've had maybe two of the original Xbox 360s Red Ring on me, and after that, I've never had an issue. Mm. The original Xbox lasted me forever, and I never had a single issue with that. Every game that Microsoft Studios has put out that I've played has been top quality. So, you know, I just love Microsoft, and Microsoft's a good company in my eyes. And that's why I was kind of surprised with this whole reveal. Like, I feel like they just jumped the gun. They rushed it, I feel like they've been doing that a lot lately. Like they rushed Halo games. 4? Yeah, and even Halo 2 with Bungie. Like, same thing. I feel like they get greedy, and they need to, like, watch it because it's gonna end up biting them in the butt in the long run.
Yeah.
So there's an article that just got released on Gizmodo a few hours ago that someone actually posted. In response to someone on Facebook, and the title of this one is "The Xbox One Just Got Way Worse and It's Our Fault." Gizmodo is one of those blogs that I kind of highly trust too. I mean, they're pretty good. Mm-hmm. They even bring up the thing in here. We talked about this on the last show that we talked about the Xbox One stuff, how it kind of compared to Steam with the DRM stuff. And they even bring this up. And Molten Slowa actually mentioned this in the chat earlier, and I also brought this up on the last podcast, but Steam wasn't instantly adopted. A lot of people didn't really like Steam, how it was kind of conceived and how the system actually worked. But looking at how it got started and then looking at where it is today, managed to pull through it, and it works really, really well. It's a fantastic system. It's a great platform to buy games on. And Microsoft was doing something very, very similar. And where Steam didn't succumb to the pressure, and they persevered and now are running a standing platform, probably the best PC game distribution platform, Microsoft just caved in.
Yep.
The software gods that they are, not using their brains and actually listening to the community instead of using their own reason, decided to cave in.
See, the thing is, though, with that, I mean, I'm trying to agree with you as much as I can on this, and I do agree, I get what you're saying, but the thing is, did Steam have a competitor when that was going on, like Microsoft does right now? Were they competing against another...
Games for Windows Live, yep.
They were? Okay.
Yep.
I was just asking. So.
But, I mean, is that really a competitor? Really?
No, it wasn't, but it was out there. It was a competitor at the time, yeah.
So.
Another thing that this takes away, though, is now I have to take my discs everywhere. I can't just go to any Xbox One, just carry my profile around, and be like, oh, I can play any game in my library. Now I have to take every single disc with me for discs that I buy instead of downloadable games I buy.
Yeah.
Can I ask you something on that? Now,
mm-hmm.
I don't want you to feel like this is being facetious, but how often do you do that? I know that you travel a lot. I'll speak for myself that I pretty much never take my games anywhere. So that doesn't affect me whatsoever. You know, my brother-in-law, you know, I might go over to his house. He might come over here. Do we share games that way? Sure. I mean, I got a couple of people I would share games with, but it's not really that much of an inconvenience to take a couple of discs with me. So I'm just curious, how much do you do that, and how much more of an inconvenience is that really, and where does that become a bad thing versus, you know, the other thing?
It's not a super bad inconvenience, but it was something that was like, oh, I don't have to really worry about this anymore, and I take my games everywhere I go. I'm always... Whenever I leave my home, I always bring an Xbox.
You're hardcore, man. You're hardcore.
I always bring my Xbox and games that I plan on playing.
Do you have that hard case that with that games thing?
Nope.
So what, you have to get a whole connection every time you go? You have to get a connection somewhere?
I throw my Xbox in my suitcase with an HDMI cable.
Wow.
Most every place I go has a TV. If I go to a place that I think that might have just an older style TV, I'll throw in my component cable. Uh-huh. And I always
games thing. You know what I'm talking about, right?
You know how bulky that thing is? And that's an extra carry-on. When I can just stick it in my suitcase.
We know what that thing looks like. Freaking Mick won one when we were at PAX East, remember?
You didn't like it?
No, I love it. I just hate him because he won it and I didn't.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
And I was one number away.
Yeah, me too. And the only reason why he won it and I didn't was because I was nice and held the door open for him and he got the ticket before I did. A little stump before I did.
I did the same thing with Goose. She won it. Or it wasn't?
Yeah, it was Goose.
Yeah, it was Goose. So she won it and I let them go first. So I was in the same exact boat you were in.
I'm going to see, though, because he's not going to Prime this year. So I'm going to see if he'll let me borrow that and let me use it as my carry-on.
Wait, he's not?
No, he's not going to be able to afford it, so he backed out.
Oh.
But I'm going to see now if it's one a room of my other of three. Friends can go. Huh?
Is it a room of three now, or is it room two?
Right now, it's me, SMG, and my buddy, and my cousin, Dylan.
Okay.
And I'm looking to get another friend to go.
Nice.
So I'm going to see if my other friends can go, and if not, by the time it shows up, I'll sell the ticket and I'll have an extra $100.
Nice. So, well, you know what? Maybe we might be able to do a merge of roommates because it's me and one other person right now in the room that we have.
Oh yeah, there we go. Well, let's talk about that.
I'm going to bring something up about that article that you posted, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so I was reading this while you were talking about what you were talking about there. And it said a paragraph in the article. The real fear behind DRM on games is the idea that at some point in the future, you'll be told that you are no longer allowed to use the content you've paid for. It's that you're allowed to use anything at all instead of outright owning it. And in the past, DRM has absolutely worked like that.
Do you know that we don't own our Xboxes? We're licensed to use them.
No, I'm sorry. I own my Xbox. I don't care what they
say. No,
we
are licensed to use them. We don't own the Xboxes.
I bought
in the user agreement.
If I don't have an internet connection, I can still play my games. You know, they can say it's a license all they want, but if I were to take it off the internet right now and never update it again, that's my Xbox. It's not like Microsoft can come and take it from me. I'd like to see them try.
If they went to court right now and said that Chris Salerno took our Xbox and then he put his Xbox in court, like, Chris would get his Xbox back. Halo Fan for Life would keep his Xbox. It is his Xbox.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, I don't know what the legal implications are. I just know from reading through that it's actually a license to use it.
Yeah. Well,
but it's yours. So, I mean, own it.
Essentially, it is. But from a legal perspective,
the paragraph that I read then is that the fear with with DRM is that, you know,
you
in the future
said DMR
down the line,
too.
What's that?
You almost said DMR too.
I said DRM, right?
You said DMR at first.
Okay. Well, DRM. Okay. So this is something that it wasn't a fear that I had, but I did read other people, you know, worrying about this, that DRM. Let's say, you know, 10 years down the line when the next console comes, you know, Microsoft then says, okay, you've got 2 years before we shut down the servers now for the Xbox One. And because at the time before the reversal, you had to be connected in order to even be able to play your games. Well, that would have meant, that means in 2 years, I'm not going to be able to play this library of games that I built up over 10 years. So I think that's one other thing that really got a lot of other people up in arms about. You know, granted, that's something long in the future. It's something that Microsoft could have probably changed long in the future. But right now, this very moment, a lot of people were thinking that. So, you know, I'm glad again that we're having a conversation. I'm seeing where you're coming from on a lot of these points, but that there is a pretty key thing, I think. You know, that now we would be licensing the games as opposed to actually physically owning the games. A lot of people don't like that idea. They want to be able to stick the disc anytime they want and play the game anytime they want, offline, online, it shouldn't matter. So, you know, this worry about, oh, well, you know, if I have to be connected to play my games and then Microsoft decides to shut down, or Lord forbid, you know, the server that you're playing, you know, you're playing on in your area, you know, a transformer blows and there goes the server, and maybe, you know, you can't get connected, which I would hope it would, you know, shift to another server. But still, you know, what if something like that happens, you know, and now all of a sudden you can't play the games that you paid your money for, you know?
But HFFL, what if I'm too lazy to swap discs out? What if I want to just have my disc right there on my console, digitally?
And I think you just answered the question. Lazy. How really? This is what I don't get. How? Look, I'm a big-ass gamer myself. I'm a big man, okay? And I'll get up off my ass and change my disc. How really hard is it to change your freaking disc out? And
it's, you know, not.
Is it really going to make that much of an impact that it might take an extra couple minutes for your game to load up from disk as opposed to having it? And this is the kind of ridiculousness that I'm talking about. I guess, again, maybe it's just me being old fashioned or whatever, but I think, okay, yes, I'm going to sound like an old fart here, but humanity is propelling itself technologically wise, whatever word you want to use. Just way too fast for its own damn good. And that, you know, we're trying to make things easier and more accessible and faster, but it ends up also making us lazier and dumber at the same time, because we're not enabling ourselves to get up and do things. You know, it's not that much of an inconvenience to change a disc. It's not that big of a deal if we have to wait an extra couple of minutes for a game to load up. You know, I get that people want the instant, you know, the idea of being able to switch games quickly, you know, and not have to get up. But if that is really an inconvenience to people, then there's a bigger issue at hand than the matter.
I don't think it's the fact that it's an inconvenience. It's just it's convenient to have something like that. I mean, I don't see myself as lazy. I think people choose to be lazy and complain about that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they can. And yeah, it's like, if you had to, I don't care. I'll get up and switch discs. It's not that bad. I mean, once it gets to like where you're having to switch like between five different discs for like some games I know that are out there, then yeah, that gets ridiculous. But if it's just something that if you're switching from one disc to another, like campaign to multiplayer, like you do with Battlefield 3, I don't care. I'll get up and switch the disc. It's essentially a different game slash game mode anyways. I mean, it would be convenient.
Aspect, for instance, it'd be convenient.
Right. I mean, it'd be convenient to do it, but it's not something that's required. So, yeah. I know technology does definitely push humanity in a way that enables people to be lazy, but there are definitely places there where it's like, it's, in my opinion, it's being more efficient at things. So.
Sure.
The more seconds I don't have to worry about switching discs, the more seconds I can probably do for working on my Halo book.
Sure. But see, really, it's a matter of seconds. And I know people will say, well, over the course of the year, that time adds up. Yes, but in the specific moment that these things are happening, a few seconds really isn't going to matter. Even a couple of minutes isn't really going to matter, you know. So, I don't know. That's just me being old.
Well, also, Kinect is staving off that inactivity that you were talking about.
Oh, because they have that one game?
Well, you gotta get up and move, whatever, Kinect Sports.
I mean, a lot of people really like that.
On Kinect right now. I don't
just
know
dance?
What else to say about it, like, I...
it's just Dance for the 360, right?
Oh. No, you're right. What's that? Dance Central.
Dance Central, that's it.
Yep,
okay.
That's it.
Yep.
That one's fun, I guess. I mean, people say it is. I've never tried it.
I've never tried because I don't dance. I'm a horrible dancer. So
here's something else I wanted to mention too. Jesus, why do I always? I'm getting old, guys. Alzheimer's. I'm telling you. Oh my God, this is just ridiculous. Oh, I hate getting old. It has to deal with your games and Xbox One. Oh, shoot. dead space, dead air.
Like what specifically? Like the installation, the what you do with them later.
No. Okay, if your Xbox One console, you know, gets some kind of a glitch within it, are you going? No drinking. I'm not drinking. No. And you know, what if something goes wrong with the console? You know, now you've got some real issues here. But if you have your discs, you could go play it somewhere else. I guess maybe with the cloud service and with the way they had it, you could take your account and play it other places. But cloud, I guess, would have taken care of that. Because yep. I was just thinking, what would happen to your profile on your Xbox One? But I guess if it is connected to the cloud, you would have been okay there. Well, I guess that part would have been all right. Never mind. See, I just had to talk it through.
Fair enough. I mean, yeah, the game library was the other thing that I had. There weren't any other big things that's DRM specific that really came to mind in terms of advantages over it. There is one thing that they changed when kind of regressing back to how they're doing it now, and there is no more region checking for discs. Everything's region free with their new way of doing things. So
isn't that a good thing?
Yeah, that's a good thing, but that's like the only good thing that we got out of it, I guess.
Oh, it's not.
I get to rent games. That's a good thing for me.
Yeah, I mean, I got to be honest with you guys. When it comes to games like used games, I'm not a big used game person, but I still, as a consumer, want that option that, you know, if 6 months down the line, I want to go buy Iron Man 3, for instance, which is not really a game, but let's just say, you know, if 6 months down the line, I want to go and buy it, that I can go in and I can get it for half the price or less, that I'm not forced to have to pay, you know, the full retail price, you know, for the, you know, because of DRM, you know, and download it and all that kind of stuff. It's just, I like the idea of being able to buy a used game if I want, you know. Again, I don't take advantage of it often, so it really isn't a big issue for me, but I still want the option to be there. And I know that there are tons of people that take advantage of being able to buy games used or rent games even. Yes, there are still places to do that. My God, I have a friend of mine that lives in England that his gamer score, I think, is somewhere up around 180,000. And that's because he will rent a game for a week, play the hell out of the game, and then take it back and go get another game. Well, having this, he wouldn't be able to do that at all. You know, now, is the developer getting any money out of this? Yeah, maybe not off of him, but, you know, other people certainly that buy used games, you know, like for instance, here, I'll give this example. What is that? It's a cowboy shooter game. Just came out a couple years ago. You know what I'm talking about? Oh, God.
I believe you're talking about Red Dead Redemption?
That's it. Red Dead Redemption. Yeah, I did not buy that game new. I wanted to buy it, but I just couldn't afford it at the time. And but then I saw there were deals on some of the DLC, and then there was a price reduction on the game itself. And you know what? I bought that game and then subsequently bought all the DLC. Yes, at a reduced price, but through Xbox Live. But the point is because I was allowed to buy the game at a reduced price elsewhere, I then went and bought the DLC, and that DLC money, reduced or not, still, you know, the developer got something out of that. So, you know, to say, well, only DRM, that's just not going to cut it for everybody. You know,
that reduced price being still coming to Xbox through what they have with their DRM system through sales, and you go buy that and that sale, instead of going back to GameStop, it goes directly to the developer when you're supporting it.
You're talking the DLC? Well, yeah, I bought the DLC.
Yeah, the DLC in the game. Because, yeah, I mean, but they were planning to do it, the games would have gone on sale probably pretty quickly. You would have been able to buy it then as well. You would have probably bought the DLC. And that discounted game, instead of going to GameStop for money, it would have gone to the developer.
Mm. Well, you know what? I guess it's that I never heard any talk at all from Microsoft about games being discounted. And, you know, previous to this too, we heard all the wild rumors about fees for the games and all that stuff. And that, you know, if you were going to buy a used game, that it essentially would have been the cost of the whole new game. And, you know, and that got debunked. But that was one big powerful thing that that moved a lot of people into the argument, you know. So.
Well, and they didn't even really go into the details behind their, like, used game thing.
Yeah. See, this is what I was saying then earlier about Microsoft really needed to be a lot more transparent with that kind of stuff. And because they weren't, that's why they took the hit that they did, you know, PR-wise. You know, they took the hit for their reveal. They took the hit at E3 just because they weren't upfront and transparent about it. You know, you're doing this big of a reveal. You know, you're already this close to launch with it anyways. You need to come out and, and be this forward about, you know, upfront about the information. If they would have done that ahead of time, let us know these other things in development. Let us know that games would be at a discount price, you know, later on through Xbox One. Then I think there wouldn't have been as much of a backlash to it. And, you know, they wouldn't have had this nightmare that they had, and they wouldn't have had to have done this reversal as they did.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said earlier, they should have been way more vocal with stuff. They should have told us a lot more off from the get-go, and then this would not have been an issue.
Tap, tap, tap. Yep. We tapping?
Yep. So, I think that pretty much covers everything that we have to talk about the DRM stuff. So that's kind of our opinions on it. I think from my perspective and, a few other perspectives, that going back away from this DRM solution is really not the best way to go. I think for me personally, what they did for the DRM stuff, now seeing all the information that they had to release, it was a move in the right direction. It's innovative. It's looking towards the future. And unfortunately, most gamers want that instant gratification, so either Microsoft's just going to succumb to that instant gratification notion, and we're going to be stuck and stagnated here for who knows how long, or maybe if they listen to some of the other community, some of the other side of things, maybe they'll try to mix the best of both worlds and come out with an even better solution than what these previous two are. That'd be cool.
I'd like to see that.
If they actually kind of pulled their head out of their whatever they're sticking their heads into right now, whether it
orifice.
Be, I don't know if it's orifices at this point. I think a good combination would be having that digital. I was perfectly fine with the DRM system. The 24-hour check-in for me was ridiculous.
Yep.
And Steam doesn't even require the online check-in. Like, you could go offline with Steam forever and not have to check in. You still have to log in with, like, your username and password, but that check doesn't have to happen every time. I'd be okay, honestly, with a week check-in or something. And maybe if you're out with power for more than a week, maybe you can only play it on the console that you originally registered that initial license with. So whatever your first Xbox that you bought the game or installed the game to, that's the only console you can play it on, which I would be, that makes sense.
You mean offline?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, if that console, like if you're going to get a different console, you should be allowed to transfer licenses to the other console, and yes, then that should still work.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that would be a good medium.
Even then, even a week, like, why does it have to be so close? Like, why can't you just check in every month, like, or every 6 months or whatever? Like, why does it have to be so often? Is there a reason for that?
Well, like it has been said, you know, if you sell a game, then, you know, then they're worried about, well, other people
revoking.
Then,
game.
I can actually agree with that. A week sounds good, or maybe 2 weeks, you know, because then you've got people that are, you know, they go on vacation, then they don't take their Xbox with them. You know, if I go to, well, not, Lord forbid, I could go to Hawaii, but if I went to Hawaii, I'm sorry, I'm not taking my Xbox with me, man. I'm going to enjoy Hawaii, you know. So if I was going to be gone for a week or two, you know, that'd be fine then. If they say, you know, okay, it would be a 2 week check-in, you know, this way it allows for people that lose power, that go on vacations or whatever, you know, whatever. If, Lord forbid, you have a, you know, a medical emergency, you know, so that would allow for people to have that time. I would have been okay with that, you know, and if they would have, you know, they could have been upfront and explained why. So I think there is room, I think, for a happy medium here. And I think we've through this conversation, I think we both started to realize each other's point of view, whether we agree or not. I think we've started to realize that there's room for them to have DRM with the Xbox One still, just not have as many restrictions with it.
Yeah.
There's a happy medium somewhere. It does exist.
I definitely agree with you.
So, all right, guys, I think that pretty much wraps it up for us tonight. Thank you for tuning in to this episode. I know it wasn't particularly Halo heavy, but it is something that kind of relates to all of us here, especially with the future of Xbox and the future of Halo kind of hanging in the balance. So I want to give a big thanks to Drax and Sal for coming on last minute and helping us out here, kind of cover this. I really appreciate you guys coming out.
Thanks. No problem. Thanks, and I appreciate you letting me be the devil's advocate in this case.
It's always good to have the other side of the debate.
What's that?
It's always good to have the other side of the debate. Otherwise, it's not a debate. You don't want everybody having the same opinion on something. Otherwise, it's not entertaining. So.
Well, and it allowed us to talk out some of these things, too, and realize some things. Like I said, I actually gained some new knowledge from this and new appreciation. So it was a good thing.
Yep.
So thank you.
All right. So with that said, thank you, everyone, for tuning in who were on the live stream. We had pretty decent turnout for what we normally get. So thank you all for tuning in to us live. You can normally catch us live on Thursday. It's at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. This week we did it a day early because I will be flying out to San Francisco for a wedding. So I will not be here.
You getting married?
I am not getting married. No. No. A friend of mine is getting married.
You sure it's not Alyssosaurus? Come on.
It is Alyssosaurus that is getting married. But no, I am not.
No, seriously?
Yeah.
She's getting married?
Yes.
Yep. Oh, my God. I was just joking.
No.
Yeah, really I was thinking you were going to get married to Alyssosaurus. Wow.
Oh, I'm going to tell you said that.
There's two guys now that didn't get the girl this week. You and Warren from Playtime. Damn it. My life's going to hell.
Oh, man. Oh, wow. All right. So as far... Wow. Okay. With that said, thank you again for tuning in. So yeah, normally we do it Thursdays. We will be doing it Thursday. Actually for the next 2 weeks, we're not going to be doing it Thursday. Next week on Thursday is when the Halo Mold competition actually starts. So I will be partaking I'm part of the staff, so I have to be there. So we will be doing the podcast again on Wednesday next week. I know that kind of interferes with Wacky Wednesday, but since the bulletins come out on Wednesday, we kind of try to do it on or after the bulletin comes out. So we may move Wacky Wednesday to Tuesday, or since we had Monday Night Matchmaking this week, we may move it to Monday. So I will keep you guys updated via Twitter, Facebook, and the website. So keep an eye out for that. We'll let you know what's going on. Those game nights usually happen at 8:30 p.m. as well. And you can, of course, watch us live during our game nights and during our podcast live stream on Twitch TV. We're at twitch.tv/podtacular. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter /podtacular, both places. You can also find us on YouTube, Podtac TV. And make sure you check out our website as well, podtacular.com. While you're there, make sure you send us a submission. You can use the big green button on the homepage, or you can send us a submission directly to submissions@podtacular.com and leave any questions, comments about anything that we've talked about tonight on the show, whether or not you think the Microsoft Xbox DRM kind of reversal was the right move or not. Maybe some of the stuff that went on in E3, if you have any questions about that, definitely be sure to bring that up as well. You can do that again with email, or you can call our listener voicemail at 240-200-HALO. That's 240-200-4256. And leave any kind of those messages related there as well. Try to keep them around 90 seconds. That's kind of the time frame we like to keep them in. It's about the time frame I think a lot of people are bearing to listen to a phone call. definitely check both of those out. We appreciate any submissions that you guys have, and we do regularly read those on the show. It's just been a little finicky lately because of how we've been doing some of the special shows that have come out lately, like the Xbox reveal and the E3. So we have been doing those on occasion, but we are looking to do those kind of regularly. Make sure you also check out the Halo Mole when it comes out. It's the project that myself and Jack Fire have been working on, which will come out in late July. So it's something that we've been really working hard on, and something that we think you guys will really enjoy. So definitely be on a lookout for that as well. There's also something that's going to be going on at RTX, and I have a podcasting panel. I've said this on the last few podcasts and just wanted to kind of reiterate it here. But I'm giving a panel discussing just the ins and out of podcasting and some little tips that can help you get a podcast started. Some things that if you already have a podcast that you may be able to add some value to your podcast. So I will be doing that on Sunday at 4 o'clock in room 16. So if you are going, definitely head on over there. Check out room 16 at 4 o'clock on Sunday. And that's where I will be giving my podcasting panel. It will be with Goose Checker from Griffball Hub, Roadblock from Glip Shark, and Lindsay from Rooster Teeth. Lindsay does the audio and podcasting direction for the Rooster Teeth podcast and now the Patch. So definitely check all of them out and their podcasts. They have some great podcasts, which is one of the reasons why I am bringing them on my panel. So should be good. Don't know if it's live streamed. If it's live streamed, I will let you guys know. If it's not live streamed, we will be having video and audio recordings for it. So you will not miss a beat if you don't or not able to make it. Last orders of business, we have some donators that decided to graciously give us some backing to help out with our website costs and some other things. Of those people, we have a repeat donator. This is Pence Halo, who's in the chat quite often. So you're getting a shout out here tonight. He donated $100 before, and now he's donated another $50. So I don't know what to say. You deserve a shirt. So if you want to email me your address, I will send you a shirt personally, a Podtacular shirt. So get on that. We also have a couple other donators. We also have Venir Freya. She used to be with BigTeamBattle.net, but now she's stepped down from her duties. And she's mostly hangs over with the Griffball crew. So she is on a team called Master Theory. So met her at PAX East. Great gal. Really cool to hang out with. She donated some money towards us. And we also have a donation from, I think I mentioned this one before, but just in case I didn't, from Bobby B444, who also donated some money. So thank you guys very much for supporting the show. We really appreciate it. Some stuff that's coming down the pipeline, of course, is new forums. That will take place definitely after my projects that I've been working on, which is the Rooster Teeth panel, the Halo Mole, and then my Spartan Ops book that I've been working on. So after all of those are said and done, you guys will be receiving new forums pronto. And there are some good reasons behind that too, because our spammer count is getting ridiculously uncontrollable. Sorry. So that's coming down the pipeline as well. Possibly in late winter this year, maybe early spring next year, I will start development on Podtacular apps as well. So those will be coming down the pipeline hopefully too. So that's what your donations are going towards, is just helping support the website, Twitch Turbo, and a couple other things. So definitely appreciate it, guys. You guys deserve major props, major shout-outs. With that said, thank you again for tuning in. This has been episode 377. Hopefully we didn't bore your brains out with all the details behind the Microsoft DRM decision. If we did, I'm sorry, but this is something that is very, very important to us, and it's something that we should be very mindful of. So hopefully you guys feel the same way. And hopefully don't just take our words for everything you hear. Definitely do your own research. Go look at some of these articles that we were talking about. There will be articles posted along with the show on our page, on the show page at podtacular.com. So take a look at some of the links. Let us Come up with your own theory, your own ideas behind what you think. We're just imparting our wisdom, being kind of big personalities in the gaming, specifically Halo sphere. So definitely go out and research this on your own as well. I think that's pretty much it. Until next time, guys, keep on fragging DRM, I guess.
That was exactly what I was going to say. Good job, dude.